Mission did not, however, establish that the passport was forwarded to Sater. Footnote 363. Into the spring of 2016, Sater and Cohen continued to discuss a trip to Moscow in connection with the Trump Moscow project. On April 20, 2016, Sater wrote Cohen, "The people wanted to know when you are coming." Footnote 364. On May 4, 2016, Sater followed up, "I had a chat with Moscow. Assuming the trip does happen, the question is before or after the convention. I said I believe, but don't know for sure, that it's probably after the convention. Obviously, the pre-meeting trip, you only, can happen anytime you want, but the two big guys were, sick, the question. I said I would confirm and revert. Let me know about if I was right by saying I believe after Cleveland, and also when you want to speak to them and possibly fly over." Footnote 365. Cohen responded, "My trip before Cleveland. Trump once he becomes the nominee after the convention." Footnote 366. The day after this exchange, Sater tied Cohen's travel to Russia to the St. Petersburg International Economic Forum. Forum. An annual event attended by prominent Russian politicians and businessmen. Sater told the office that he was informed by a business associate that Peskov wanted to invite Cohen to the forum. Footnote 367. On May 5, 2016, Sater wrote to Cohen, "Peskov would like to invite you as his guest to the St. Petersburg Forum, which is Russia's Davos. It's June 16th through 19th. He wants to meet there with you and possibly introduce you to either Putin or Medvedev, as they are not sure if one or both will be there. This is perfect. The entire business class of Russia will be there as well. He said anything you want to discuss, including dates and subjects, are on the table to discuss." Footnote 368. The following day, Sater asked Cohen to confirm those dates would work for him to travel. Cohen wrote back, "Works for me." Footnote 369. On June 9, 2016, Sater sent Cohen a notice that he, Sater, was completing the badges for the forum, adding, "Putin is there on the 17th, very strong chance you will meet him as well." Footnote 370. On June 13, 2016, Sater forwarded Cohen an invitation to the forum signed by the director of the Roscongress Foundation, the Russian entity organizing the forum. Footnote 371. Sater also sent Cohen a Russian visa application and asked him to send two passport photos. Footnote 372. According to Cohen, the invitation gave no indication that Peskov had been involved in inviting him. Cohen was concerned that Russian officials were not actually involved or were not interested in meeting with him, as Sater had alleged, and so he decided not to go to the forum. Footnote 373. On June 14, 2016, Cohen met Sater in the lobby of the Trump Tower in New York and informed him that he would not be traveling at that time. Footnote 374. 2. Candidate Trump's opportunities to travel to Russia. The investigation identified evidence that during the period the Trump Moscow project was under consideration, the possibility of candidate Trump visiting Russia arose in two contexts. First, in interviews with the office, Cohen stated that he discussed the subject of traveling to Russia with Trump twice, once in late 2015 and again in spring 2016. Footnote 375. According to Cohen, Trump indicated a willingness to travel if it would assist the project significantly. On one occasion, Trump told Cohen to speak with then-campaign manager Corey Lewandowski to coordinate the candidate's schedule. Cohen recalled that he spoke with Lewandowski, who suggested that they speak again when Cohen had actual dates to evaluate. Cohen indicated, however, that he knew that travel prior to the Republican National Convention would be impossible given the candidate's pre-existing commitments to the campaign. Footnote 376. Second, like Cohen, Trump received and turned down an invitation to the St. Petersburg International Economic Forum. In late December 2015, Mira Duma, a contact of Ivanka Trump's from the fashion industry, first passed along invitations for Ivanka Trump and candidate Trump from Sergei Prihodka, a deputy prime minister of the Russian Federation. Footnote 377. On January 14, 2016, Rona Graf sent an email to Duma stating that Trump was honored to be asked to participate in the highly prestigious forum event, but that he would have to decline the invitation given his very grueling and full travel schedule as a presidential candidate. Footnote 378. Graf asked Duma whether she recommended that Graf send a formal note to the deputy prime minister declining his invitation. Duma replied that a formal note would be great. Footnote 379. It does not appear that Graf prepared that note immediately. According to written answers from President Trump, footnote 380, Graf received an email from Deputy Prime Minister Prihodka on March 17, 2016, again inviting Trump to participate in the 2016 forum in St. Petersburg, footnote 381. 2 weeks later, on March 31, 2016, Graf prepared for Trump's signature a two-paragraph letter declining the invitation, footnote 382. The letter stated that Trump's schedule has become extremely demanding because of the presidential campaign, that he already had several commitments in the United States for the time of the forum, but that he otherwise would have gladly given every consideration to attending such an important event. Footnote 383. Graf forwarded the letter to another executive assistant at the Trump Organization with instructions to print the document on letterhead for Trump to sign. Footnote 384. At approximately the same time that the letter was being prepared, Robert Forrestman, a New York-based investment banker, began reaching out to Graf to secure an in-person meeting with candidate Trump. According to Forrestman, he had been asked by Anton Kabukov, a Russian presidential aide involved with the Roscongress Foundation, to see if Trump could speak at the forum. Footnote 385. Forrestman first emailed Graf on March 31, 2016, following a phone introduction brokered through Trump business associate Mark Burnett, who produced the television show The Apprentice. In his email, Forrestman referenced his long-standing personal and professional expertise in Russia and Ukraine, his work setting up an early private channel between Vladimir Putin and former U.S. President George W. Bush, and an approach he had received from senior Kremlin officials about the candidate. Forrestman asked Graf for a meeting with the candidate, Corey Lewandowski, or another relevant person to discuss this and other concrete things Forrestman felt uncomfortable discussing over unsecure email. Footnote 386. On April 4, 2016, Graf forwarded Forrestman's meeting request to Jessica Macchia, another executive assistant to Trump. Footnote 387. With no response forthcoming, Forrestman twice sent reminders to Graf, first on April 26th and again on April 30th, 2016. Footnote 388. Graf sent an apology to Forrestman and forwarded his April 26th email, as well as his initial March 2016 email to Lewandowski. Footnote 389. On May 2, 2016, Graf forwarded Forrestman's April 30th email, which suggested an alternative meeting with Donald Trump Jr. or Eric Trump, so that Forrestman could convey to them information that should be conveyed to the candidate personally or to someone the candidate absolutely trusts, to policy advisor Stephen Miller. Footnote 390. No communications or other evidence obtained by the office indicate that the Trump campaign learned that Forrestman was reaching out to invite the candidate to the forum, or that the campaign otherwise followed up with Forrestman until after the election, when he interacted with the transition team as he pursued a possible position in the incoming administration. Footnote 391. When interviewed by the office, Forrestman denied that the specific approach from senior Kremlin officials noted in his March 31, 2016 email was anything other than Kobyukov's invitation to Roscongress. According to Forrestman, the concrete things he referenced in the same email were a combination of the invitation itself, Forestman's personal perspective on the invitation and Russia policy in general, and details of a Ukraine plan supported by a U.S. think tank, East-West Institute. Forestman told the office that Kabukov had extended similar invitations through him to another Republican presidential candidate and one other politician. Forestman also said that Kabukov had asked Forestman to invite Trump to speak after that other presidential candidate withdrew from the race and the other politician's participation did not work out. Footnote 392. Finally, Forestman claimed to have no plans to establish a back channel involving Trump, stating the reference to his involvement in the Bush-Putin back channel was meant to burnish his credentials to the campaign. Forestman commented that he had not recognized any of the experts announced as Trump's foreign policy team in March 2016 and wanted to secure an in-person meeting with the candidate to share his professional background and policy views, including that Trump should decline Kobayakov's invitation to speak at the forum. Footnote 393. 2. George Papadopoulos. George Papadopoulos was a foreign policy advisor to the Trump campaign from March 2016 to early October 2016. Footnote 394. In late April 2016, Papadopoulos was told by London-based professor Joseph Mifsud, immediately after Mifsud's return from a trip to Moscow, that the Russian government had obtained dirt on candidate Clinton in the form of thousands of emails. 1 week later, on May 6, 2016, Papadopoulos suggested to a representative of a foreign government that the Trump campaign had received indications from the Russian government that it could assist the campaign through the anonymous release of information that would be damaging to candidate Clinton. Papadopoulos shared information about Russian dirt with people outside of the campaign, and the office investigated whether he also provided it to a campaign official. Papadopoulos and the campaign officials with whom he interacted told the office that they did not recall that Papadopoulos passed them the information. Throughout the relevant period of time and for several months thereafter, Papadopoulos worked with Mifsud and two Russian nationals to arrange a meeting between the campaign and the Russian government. That meeting never came to pass. A. Origins of campaign work. In March 2016, Papadopoulos became a foreign policy advisor to the Trump campaign. Footnote 395. As early as the summer of 2015, he had sought a role as a policy advisor to the campaign, but in a September 30, 2015 email, he was told that the campaign was not hiring policy advisors. Footnote 396. In late 2015, Papadopoulos obtained a paid position on the campaign of Republican presidential candidate Ben Carson. Footnote 397. Although Carson remained in the presidential race until early March 2016, Papadopoulos had stopped actively working for his campaign by early February 2016. Footnote 398. At that time, Papadopoulos reached out to a contact at the London Center of International Law Practice, LCILP, which billed itself as a unique institution comprising high-level professional international law practitioners dedicated to the advancement of global legal knowledge and the practice of international law. Footnote 399. Papadopoulos said that he had finished his role with the Carson campaign and asked if LCILP was hiring. Footnote 400. In early February, Papadopoulos agreed to join LCILP and arrived in London to begin work. Footnote 401. As he was taking his position at LCILP, Papadopoulos contacted Trump campaign manager Corey Lewandowski via LinkedIn and emailed campaign official Michael Glasner about his interest in joining the Trump campaign. Footnote 402. On March 2, 2016, Papadopoulos sent Glasner another message reiterating his interest. Footnote 403. Glasner passed along word of Papadopoulos's interest to another campaign official, Joy Lutz, who notified Papadopoulos by email that she had been told by Glasner to introduce Papadopoulos to Sam Clovis. the Trump campaign's national co-chair and chief policy advisor, footnote 404. At the time of Papadopoulos's March 2nd email, the media was criticizing the Trump campaign for lack of experienced foreign policy or national security advisors within its ranks, footnote 405. To address that issue, senior campaign officials asked Clovis to put a foreign policy team together on short notice, footnote 406. After receiving Papadopoulos's name from Lutz, Clovis performed a Google search on Papadopoulos, learned that he had worked at the Hudson Institute, and believed that he had credibility on energy issues, footnote 407. On March 3, 2016, Clovis arranged to speak with Papadopoulos by phone to discuss Papadopoulos joining the campaign as a foreign policy advisor, and on March 6, 2016, the two spoke. Footnote 408. Papadopoulos recalled that Russia was mentioned as a topic, and he understood from the conversation that Russia would be an important aspect of the campaign's foreign policy. Footnote 409. At the end of the conversation, Clovis offered Papadopoulos a role as a foreign policy advisor to the campaign, and Papadopoulos accepted the offer. Footnote 410. B. Initial Russia-related contacts. Approximately a week after signing on as a foreign policy advisor, Papadopoulos traveled to Rome, Italy, as part of his duties with LCILP, footnote 411. The purpose of the trip was to meet officials affiliated with Link Campus University, a for-profit institution headed by a former Italian government official, footnote 412. During the visit, Papadopoulos was introduced to Joseph Mifsud. Mifsud is a Maltese national who worked as a professor at the London Academy of Diplomacy in London, England, footnote 413. Although Mifsud worked out of London and was also affiliated with LCILP, the encounter in Rome was the first time that Papadopoulos met him, footnote 414. Mifsud maintained various Russian contacts while living in London, as described further below. Among his contacts was redaction investigative technique, including footnote 415, a one-time employee of the IRA, the entity that carried out the Russian social media campaign, see Volume 1, Section 2, Supra. In January and February 2016, Mifsud and redaction investigative technique discussed redaction investigative technique, possibly meeting in Russia. The investigation did not identify evidence of them meeting. Later, in the spring of 2016, Redaction Investigative Technique was also in contact with Redaction Investigative Technique that was linked to an employee of the Russian Ministry of Defense, and that account had overlapping contacts with a group of Russian military-controlled Facebook accounts that included accounts used to promote the DC leaks releases in the course of the GRU's hack-and-release operations. See Volume 1, Section 3B1, Supra. According to Papadopoulos, Mifsud at first seemed uninterested in Papadopoulos when they met in Rome. Footnote 416. After Papadopoulos informed Mifsud about his role in the Trump campaign, however, Mifsud appeared to take greater interest in Papadopoulos. Footnote 417. The two discussed Mifsud's European and Russian contacts and had a general discussion about Russia. Mifsud also offered to introduce Papadopoulos to European leaders and others with contacts to the Russian government. Footnote 418. Papadopoulos told the office that Mifsud's claim of substantial connections with Russian government officials interested Papadopoulos, who thought that such connections could increase his importance as a policy advisor to the Trump campaign. Footnote 419. On March 17, 2016, Papadopoulos returned to London. Footnote 420. 4 days later, candidate Trump publicly named him as a member of the Foreign Policy and National Security Advisory Team, chaired by Senator Jeff Sessions, describing Papadopoulos as an oil and energy consultant and an excellent guy. Footnote 421. On March 24, 2016, Papadopoulos met with Mifsud in London. Footnote 422. Mifsud was accompanied by a Russian female named Olga Polonskaya. Mifsud introduced Polonskaya as a former student of his who had connections to Vladimir Putin. Footnote 423. Papadopoulos understood at the time that Polonskaya may have been Putin's niece, but later learned that this was not true. Footnote 424. During the meeting, Polonskaya offered to help Papadopoulos establish contacts in Russia and stated that the Russian ambassador in London was a friend of hers. Footnote 425. Based on this interaction, Papadopoulos expected Mifsud and Polonskaya to introduce him to the Russian ambassador in London, but that did not occur. Footnote 426. Following his meeting with Mifsud, Papadopoulos sent an email to members of the Trump campaign's foreign policy advisory team. The subject line of the message was, "Meeting with Russian leadership, including Putin." Footnote 427. The message stated in pertinent part, "I just finished a very productive lunch with a good friend of mine, Joseph Mifsud, the director of the London Academy of Diplomacy, who introduced me to both Putin's niece and the Russian ambassador in London, who also acts as the deputy foreign minister." Footnote 428. The topic of the lunch was to arrange a meeting between us and the Russian leadership to discuss U.S.-Russia ties under President Trump. They are keen to host us in a neutral city or directly in Moscow. They said the leadership, including Putin, is ready to meet with us and Mr. Trump should there be interest. Waiting for everyone's thoughts on moving forward with this very important issue. Footnote 429. Papadopoulos's message came at a time when Clovis perceived a shift in the campaign's approach toward Russia. From one of engaging with Russia through the NATO framework and taking a strong stance on Russian aggression in Ukraine, redaction grand jury, including footnote 430. Clovis's response to Papadopoulos, however, did not reflect that shift. Replying to Papadopoulos and the other members of the foreign policy advisory team copied on the initial email, Clovis wrote, "This is most informative. Let me work it through the campaign. No commitments until we see how this plays out. My thought is that we probably should not go forward with any meetings with the Russians until we have had occasion to sit with our NATO allies, especially France, Germany, and Great Britain. We need to reassure our allies that we are not going to advance anything with Russia until we have everyone on the same page. More thoughts later today. Great work." Footnote 431. C. March 31st Foreign Policy Team Meeting. The campaign held a meeting of the Foreign Policy Advisory Team with Senator Sessions and candidate Trump approximately 1 week later, on March 31st, 2016, in Washington, D.C. Footnote 432. The meeting, which was intended to generate press coverage for the campaign, footnote 433, took place at the Trump International Hotel. Footnote 434. Papadopoulos flew to Washington for the event. At the meeting, Senator Sessions sat at one end of an oval table while Trump sat at the other. As reflected in the photograph below, which was posted to Trump's Instagram account. Note to listener, the photograph is included in the accompanying PDF. Papadopoulos sat between the two seats to Sessions' left. During the meeting, each of the newly announced foreign policy advisors introduced themselves and briefly described their areas of experience or expertise. Footnote 435. Papadopoulos spoke about his previous work in the energy sector and then brought up a potential meeting with Russian officials. Footnote 436. Specifically, Papadopoulos told the group that he had learned through his contacts in London that Putin wanted to meet with candidate Trump and that these connections could help arrange that meeting. Footnote 437. Trump and Sessions both reacted to Papadopoulos's statement. Papadopoulos and campaign advisor J.D. Gordon, who told investigators in an interview that he had a crystal-clear recollection of the meeting, have stated that Trump was interested in and receptive to the idea of a meeting with Putin. Footnote 438. Papadopoulos understood Sessions to be similarly supportive of his efforts to arrange a meeting. Footnote 439. Gordon and two other attendees, however, recall that Sessions generally opposed the proposal, though they differ in their accounts of the concerns he voiced or the strength of the opposition he expressed. Footnote 440. D. George Papadopoulos learns that Russia has dirt in the form of Clinton emails. Whatever Sessions's precise words at the March 31st meeting, Papadopoulos did not understand Sessions or anyone else in the Trump campaign to have directed that he refrain from making further efforts to arrange a meeting between the campaign and the Russian government. To the contrary, Papadopoulos told the office that he understood the campaign to be supportive of his efforts to arrange such a meeting. Footnote 441. Accordingly, when he returned to London, Papadopoulos resumed those efforts. Footnote 442. Throughout April 2016, Papadopoulos continued to correspond with, meet with, and seek Russia contacts through Mifsud and at times Polonskaya. Footnote 443. For example, within a week of her initial March 24th meeting with him, Polonskaya attempted to send Papadopoulos a text message, which email exchanges show to have been drafted or edited by Mifsud, addressing Papadopoulos's wish to engage with the Russian Federation. Footnote 444. When Papadopoulos learned from Mifsud that Polonskaya had tried to message him, he sent her an email seeking another meeting. Footnote 445. Polonskaya responded the next day that she was back in St. Petersburg, but would be very pleased to support Papadopoulos's initiatives between our two countries and to meet him again. Footnote 446. Papadopoulos stated in reply that he thought a good step would be to introduce him to the Russian ambassador in London, and that he would like to talk to the ambassador or anyone else you recommend about a potential foreign policy trip to Russia. Footnote 447. Mifsud, who had been copied on the email exchanges, replied on the morning of April 11, 2016. He wrote, "This has already been agreed. I am flying to Moscow on the 18th for a Valdai meeting, plus other meetings at the Duma. We will talk tomorrow." Footnote 448. The two bodies referenced by Mifsud are part of or associated with the Russian government. The Duma is a Russian legislative assembly, footnote 449, while Valdai refers to the Valdai Discussion Club, a Moscow-based group that is close to Russia's foreign policy establishment, footnote 450. Papadopoulos thanked Mifsud and said that he would see him tomorrow, footnote 451. For her part, Polonskaya responded that she had already alerted my personal links to our conversation and your request, that we are all very excited the possibility of a good relationship with Mr. Trump, and that the Russian Federation would love to welcome him once his candidature would be officially announced. Footnote 452. Papadopoulos's and Mifsud's mentions of seeing each other tomorrow referenced a meeting that the two had scheduled for the next morning, April 12th, 2016, at the Andaz Hotel in London. Papadopoulos acknowledged the meeting during interviews with the office, footnote 453, and records from Papadopoulos's UK cell phone and his internet search history all indicate that the meeting took place, footnote 454. Following the meeting, Mifsud traveled as planned to Moscow, footnote 455. On April 18, 2016, while in Russia, Mifsud introduced Papadopoulos over email to Ivan Timofeyev, a member of the Russian International Affairs Council, RIAC, footnote 456. Mifsud had described Timofeyev as having connections with the Russian Ministry of Foreign Affairs, MFA, footnote 457, the executive entity in Russia responsible for Russian foreign relations, footnote 458. Over the next several weeks, Papadopoulos and Timofeyev had multiple conversations over Skype and email about setting the groundwork for a potential meeting between the campaign and Russian government officials. Footnote 459. Papadopoulos told the office that, on one Skype call, He believed that his conversation with Timofeyev was being monitored or supervised by an unknown third party, because Timofeyev spoke in an official manner and Papadopoulos heard odd noises on the line. Footnote 460. Timofeyev also told Papadopoulos in an April 25, 2016 email that he had just spoken to Igor Ivanov, the president of RIAC and former foreign minister of Russia, and conveyed Ivanov's advice about how best to arrange a Moscow visit. Footnote 461. After a stop in Rome, Mifsud returned to England on April 25, 2016. Footnote 462. The next day, Papadopoulos met Mifsud for breakfast at the Andaz Hotel, the same location as their last meeting. Footnote 463. During that meeting, Mifsud told Papadopoulos that he had met with high-level Russian government officials during his recent trip to Moscow. Mifsud also said that on the trip, he learned that the Russians had obtained dirt on candidate Hillary Clinton. As Papadopoulos later stated to the FBI, Mifsud said that the dirt was in the form of emails of Clinton and that they have thousands of emails. Footnote 464. On May 6, 2016, 10 days after that meeting with Mifsud, Papadopoulos suggested to a representative of a foreign government that the Trump campaign had received indications from the Russian government that it could assist the campaign through the anonymous release of information that would be damaging to Hillary Clinton. Footnote 465. E. Russia-related communications with the campaign. While he was discussing with his foreign contacts a potential meeting of campaign officials with Russian government officials, Papadopoulos kept campaign officials apprised of his efforts. On April 25, 2016, the day before Mifsud told Papadopoulos about the emails, Papadopoulos wrote to senior policy advisor Stephen Miller that the Russian government has an open invitation by Putin for Mr. Trump to meet him when he is ready, and that the advantage of being in London is that these governments tend to speak a bit more openly in neutral cities. Footnote 466. On April 27, 2016, after his meeting with Mifsud, Papadopoulos wrote a second message to Miller stating that some interesting messages were coming in from Moscow about a trip when the time is right. Footnote 467. The same day, Papadopoulos sent a similar email to campaign manager Corey Lewandowski, telling Lewandowski that Papadopoulos had been receiving a lot of calls over the last month about Putin wanting to host Trump and the team when the time is right. Footnote 468. Papadopoulos's Russia-related communications with campaign officials continued throughout the spring and summer of 2016. On May 4, 2016, he forwarded to Lewandowski an email from Timofeyev raising the possibility of a meeting in Moscow, asking Lewandowski whether that was something we want to move forward with. Footnote 469. The next day, Papadopoulos forwarded the same Timofeyev email to Sam Clovis, adding to the top of the email, Russia update. Footnote 470. He included the same email in a May 21, 2016 message to senior campaign official Paul Manafort, under the subject line, Request from Russia to meet Mr. Trump, stating that Russia has been eager to meet Mr. Trump for quite some time and have been reaching out to me to discuss. Footnote 471. Manafort forwarded the message to another campaign official without including Papadopoulos and stated, Let's discuss. We need someone to communicate that Trump is not doing these trips. It should be someone low level in the campaign so as not to send any signal. Footnote 472. On June 1, 2016, Papadopoulos replied to an earlier email chain with Lewandowski about a Russia visit, asking if Lewandowski wanted to have a call about this topic and whether we were following up with it. Footnote 473. After Lewandowski told Papadopoulos to connect with Clovis because he was running point, Papadopoulos emailed Clovis that the Russian MFA was asking him if Mr. Trump is interested in visiting Russia at some point. Footnote 474. Papadopoulos wrote in an email that he wanted to pass this info along to you for you to decide what's best to do with it and what message I should send or to ignore. Footnote 475. After several emails and Skype exchanges with Tim Mefave, footnote 476, Papadopoulos sent one more email to Lewandowski on June 19, 2016, Lewandowski's last day as campaign manager. Footnote 477. The email stated that the Russian Ministry of Foreign Affairs had contacted him and asked whether, if Mr. Trump could not travel to Russia, a campaign representative such as Papadopoulos could attend meetings. Footnote 478. Papadopoulos told Lewandowski that he was willing to make the trip off the record if it's in the interest of Mr. Trump and the campaign to meet specific people. Footnote 479. Following Lewandowski's departure from the campaign, Papadopoulos communicated with Clovis and Walid Ferez, another member of the Foreign Policy Advisory Team, about an off-the-record meeting between the campaign and Russian government officials or with Papadopoulos's other Russia connections, Mifsud and Timofeev. Footnote 480. Papadopoulos also interacted directly with Clovis and Ferez in connection with the summit of the Transatlantic Parliamentary Group on Counterterrorism, TAG, a group for which Ferez was co-secretary general. Footnote 481. On July 16, 2016, Papadopoulos attended the TAG summit in Washington, D.C., where he sat next to Clovis, as reflected in the photograph below. Footnote 482. Note to listener, the photograph is included in the accompanying PDF. Although Clovis claimed to have no recollection of attending the TAG summit, footnote 483, Papadopoulos remembered discussing Russia and a foreign policy trip with Clovis and Ferez during the event. Footnote 484. Papadopoulos's recollection is consistent with emails sent before and after the TAG summit. The pre-summit messages included a July 11, 2016 email in which Ferez suggested meeting Papadopoulos the day after the summit to chat, footnote 485, and a July 12th message in the same chain in which Ferez advised Papadopoulos that other summit attendees are very nervous about Russia, so be aware, footnote 486. 10 days after the summit, Papadopoulos sent an email to Mifsud listing Ferez and Clovis as other participants in a potential meeting at the London Academy of Diplomacy, footnote 487. Finally, Papadopoulos's recollection is also consistent with handwritten notes from a journal that he kept at the time, footnote 488. Those notes, which are reprinted in part below, appear to refer to potential September 2016 meetings in London with representatives of the Office of Putin and suggest that Ferez, Clovis, and Papadopoulos, Walid, Sam, me, would attend without the official backing of the campaign. No official letter / no message from Trump. Footnote 489. Note to listener, the image is included in the accompanying PDF. Later communications indicate that Clovis determined that he, Clovis, could not travel. On August 15, 2016, Papadopoulos emailed Clovis that he had received requests from multiple foreign governments, even Russia, for closed-door workshops / consultations abroad, and asked whether there was still interest for Clovis, Ferez, and Papadopoulos to go on that trip. Footnote 490. Clovis copied Ferez on his response, which said that he could not travel before the election, but that he would encourage Papadopoulos and Walid to make the trips, if it is feasible. Footnote 491. Papadopoulos was dismissed from the Trump campaign in early October 2016 after an interview he gave to the Russian news agency Interfax generated adverse publicity. Footnote 492. F. Trump campaign knowledge of dirt. Papadopoulos admitted telling at least one individual outside of the campaign, specifically the then Greek foreign minister, about Russia's obtaining Clinton-related emails, footnote 493. In addition, a different foreign government informed the FBI that 10 days after meeting with Mifsud in late April 2016, Papadopoulos suggested that the Trump campaign had received indications from the Russian government that it could assist the campaign through the anonymous release of information that would be damaging to Hillary Clinton. Footnote 494. This conversation occurred after the GRU spearfished Clinton campaign chairman John Podesta and stole his emails, and the GRU hacked into the DCCC and DNC. See Volume 1, Sections 3A and 3B, supra. Such disclosures raised questions about whether Papadopoulos informed any Trump campaign official about the emails. When interviewed, Papadopoulos and the campaign officials who interacted with him told the office that they could not recall Papadopoulos's sharing the information that Russia had obtained dirt on candidate Clinton in the form of emails, or that Russia could assist the campaign through the anonymous release of information about Clinton. Papadopoulos stated that he could not clearly recall having told anyone on the campaign, and wavered about whether he actually remembered an incident in which Clovis had been upset after hearing Papadopoulos tell Clovis that Papadopoulos thought they have her emails. Footnote 495. The campaign officials who interacted or corresponded with Papadopoulos have similarly stated, with varying degrees of certainty, that he did not tell them. Senior policy advisor Stephen Miller, for example, did not remember hearing anything from Papadopoulos or Clovis about Russia having emails of or dirt on candidate Clinton. Footnote 496. Clovis stated that he did not recall anyone, including Papadopoulos, having given him non-public information that a foreign government might be in possession of material damaging to Hillary Clinton. Footnote 497. Redaction grand jury, including footnotes 498 and 499. No documentary evidence and nothing in the email accounts or other communications facilities reviewed by the office shows that Papadopoulos shared this information with the campaign. G. Additional George Papadopoulos contact. The office investigated another Russia-related contact with Papadopoulos. The office was not fully able to explore the contact because the individual at issue, Sergei Milian, remained out of the country since the inception of our investigation and declined to meet with members of the office despite our repeated efforts to obtain an interview. Papadopoulos first connected with Milian via LinkedIn on July 15, 2016, shortly after Papadopoulos had attended the TAG summit with Clovis. Footnote 500. Milian, an American citizen who is a native of Belarus, introduced himself as president of the New York-based Russian-American Chamber of Commerce, and claimed that through that position he had insider knowledge and direct access to the top hierarchy in Russian politics. Footnote 501. Papadopoulos asked Timofeev whether he had heard of Milian. Footnote 502. Although Timofeev said no, footnote 503. Papadopoulos met Milian in New York City. Footnote 504. The meetings took place on July 30th and August 1st, 2016. Footnote 505. Afterwards, Milian invited Papadopoulos to attend and potentially speak at two international energy conferences, including one that was to be held in Moscow in September 2016. Footnote 506. Papadopoulos ultimately did not attend either conference. On July 31st, 2016, following his first in-person meeting with Milian, Papadopoulos emailed Trump campaign official Bo Deniusk to say that he had been contacted by some leaders of Russian-American voters here in the U.S. about their interests in voting for Mr. Trump, and to ask whether he should put you in touch with their group, U.S.-Russia Chamber of Commerce. Footnote 507. Deniusk thanked Papadopoulos for taking the initiative, but asked him to hold off with outreach to Russian Americans, because too many articles had already portrayed the campaign, then campaign chairman Paul Manafort, and candidate Trump as being pro-Russian. Footnote 508. On August 23, 2016, Milian sent a Facebook message to Papadopoulos promising that he would share with you a disruptive technology that might be instrumental in your political work for the campaign. Footnote 509. Papadopoulos claimed to have no recollection of this matter. Footnote 510. On November 9, 2016, shortly after the election, Papadopoulos arranged to meet Milian in Chicago to discuss business opportunities, including potential work with Russian billionaires who are not under sanctions. Footnote 511. The meeting took place on November 14, 2016, at the Trump Hotel and Tower in Chicago. Footnote 512. According to Papadopoulos, the two men discussed partnering on business deals. But Papadopoulos perceived that Milian's attitude toward him changed when Papadopoulos stated that he was only pursuing private sector opportunities and was not interested in a job in the administration. Footnote 513. The two remained in contact, however, and had extended online discussions about possible business opportunities in Russia. Footnote 514. The two also arranged to meet at a Washington, D.C. bar when both attended Trump's inauguration in late January 2017. Footnote 515. 3. Carter Page. Carter Page worked for the Trump campaign from January 2016 to September 2016. He was formally and publicly announced as a foreign policy advisor by the candidate in March 2016. Footnote 516. Page had lived and worked in Russia, and he had been approached by Russian intelligence officers several years before he volunteered for the Trump campaign. During his time with the campaign, Page advocated pro-Russia foreign policy positions and traveled to Moscow in his personal capacity. Russian intelligence officials had formed relationships with Page in 2008 and 2013, and Russian officials may have focused on Page in 2016 because of his affiliation with the campaign. However, the investigation did not establish that Page coordinated with the Russian government in its efforts to interfere with the 2016 presidential election. A. Background. Before he began working for the campaign in January 2016, Page had substantial prior experience studying Russian policy issues and living and working in Moscow. From 2004 to 2007, Page was the deputy branch manager of Merrill Lynch's Moscow office. Footnote 517. There, he worked on transactions involving the Russian energy company Gazprom and came to know Gazprom's deputy chief financial officer, Sergei Yatsenko. Footnote 518. In 2008, Page founded Global Energy Capital LLC, GEC, an investment management and advisory firm focused on the energy sector in emerging markets. Footnote 519. Redaction, grand jury, including footnote 520. The company otherwise had no sources of income, and Page was forced to draw down his life savings to support himself and pursue his business venture. Footnote 521. Page asked Yatsenko to work with him at GEC as a senior advisor on a contingency basis. Redaction, grand jury, including footnote 522. In 2008, Page met Alexander Bulatov, a Russian government official who worked at the Russian consulate in New York. Footnote 523. Page later learned that Bulatov was a Russian intelligence officer. Redaction, grand jury, including footnote 524. In 2013, Viktor Podobny, another Russian intelligence officer working covertly in the United States under diplomatic cover, formed a relationship with Page. Footnote 525. Podobny met Page at an energy symposium in New York City and began exchanging emails with him. Footnote 526. Podobny and Page also met in person on multiple occasions, during which Page offered his outlook on the future of the energy industry and provided documents to Podobny about the energy business. Footnote 527. In a recorded conversation on April 8, 2013, Podobny told another intelligence officer that Page was interested in business opportunities in Russia. Footnote 528. In Podobny's words, Page got hooked on Gazprom, thinking that if they have a project, he could rise up. Maybe he can. It's obvious that he wants to earn lots of money. Footnote 529. Podobny said that he had led Page on by feeding him empty promises, that Podobny would use his Russian business connections to help Page. Footnote 530. Podobny told the other intelligence officer that his method of recruiting foreign sources was to promise them favors and then disregard them once he obtained relevant information from them. Footnote 531. In 2015, Podobny and two other Russian intelligence officers were charged with conspiracy to act as an unregistered agent of a foreign government. Footnote 532. The criminal complaint detailed Podobny's interactions with and conversations about Page, who was identified only as Male 1, footnote 533. Based on the criminal complaint's description of the interactions, Page was aware that he was the individual described as Male 1, footnote 534. Page later spoke with a Russian government official at the United Nations General Assembly and identified himself so that the official would understand he was Male 1 from the Podobny complaint. Footnote 535. Page told the official that he didn't do anything. Redaction, grand jury, including footnote 536. In interviews with the FBI before the office's opening, Page acknowledged that he understood that the individuals he had associated with were members of the Russian intelligence services. But he stated that he had only provided immaterial non-public information to them, and that he did not view this relationship as a back channel. Footnote 537. Page told investigating agents that the more immaterial non-public information I give them, the better for this country. Footnote 538. B. Origins of and Early Campaign Work. In January 2016, Page began volunteering on an informal, unpaid basis for the Trump campaign after Ed Cox, a state Republican Party official, introduced Page to Trump campaign officials. Footnote 539. Page told the office that his goal in working on the campaign was to help candidate Trump improve relations with Russia. Footnote 540. To that end, Page emailed campaign officials offering his thoughts on U.S.-Russia relations, prepared talking points and briefing memos on Russia, and proposed that candidate Trump meet with President Vladimir Putin in Moscow. Footnote 541. In communications with campaign officials, Page also repeatedly touted his high-level contacts in Russia and his ability to forge connections between candidate Trump and senior Russian government officials. For example, on January 30, 2016, Page sent an email to senior campaign officials stating that he had spent the past week in Europe and had been in discussions with some individuals with close ties to the Kremlin who recognized that Trump could have a game-changing effect in bringing the end of the new Cold War. Footnote 542. The email stated that through his discussions with these high-level contacts, Page believed that a direct meeting in Moscow between Mr. Trump and Putin could be arranged. Footnote 543. Page closed the email by criticizing U.S. sanctions on Russia. Footnote 544. Redaction, grand jury, including footnote 545. On March 21, 2016, candidate Trump formally and publicly identified Page as a member of his foreign policy team to advise on Russia and the energy sector. Footnote 546. Over the next several months, Page continued providing policy-related work product to campaign officials. For example, in April 2016, Page provided feedback on an outline for a foreign policy speech that the candidate gave at the Mayflower Hotel. Footnote 547. See Volume 1, Section 4A4, Infra. In May 2016, Page prepared an outline of an energy policy speech for the campaign and then traveled to Bismarck, North Dakota, to watch the candidate deliver the speech. Footnote 548. Chief Policy Advisor Sam Clovis expressed appreciation for Page's work and praised his work to other campaign officials. Footnote 549. C. Carter Page's July 2016 trip to Moscow. Page's affiliation with the Trump campaign took on a higher profile and drew the attention of Russian officials after the candidate named him a foreign policy advisor. As a result, in late April 2016, Page was invited to give a speech at the July 2016 commencement ceremony at the New Economics School, NES, in Moscow. Footnote 550. The NES commencement ceremony generally featured high-profile speakers. For example, President Barack Obama delivered a commencement address at the school in 2009. Footnote 551. NES officials told the office that the interest in inviting Page to speak at NES was based entirely on his status as a Trump campaign advisor who served as the candidate's Russia expert. Footnote 552. Andrei Krikovich, an associate of Page's and assistant professor at the Higher School of Economics in Russia, recommended that NES rector Shlomo Weber invite Page to give the commencement address based on his connection to the Trump campaign. Footnote 553. Denis Klimentov, an employee of NES, said that when Russians learned of Page's involvement in the Trump campaign in March 2016, the excitement was palpable. Footnote 554. Weber recalled that in summer 2016, there was substantial interest in the Trump campaign in Moscow, and he felt that bringing a member of the campaign to the school would be beneficial. Footnote 555. Page was eager to accept the invitation to speak at NES, and he sought approval from Trump campaign officials to make the trip to Russia. Footnote 556. On May 16, 2016, while that request was still under consideration, Page emailed Clovis, J.D. Gordon, and Walid Ferez and suggested that candidate Trump take his place speaking at the commencement ceremony in Moscow. Footnote 557. On June 19, 2016, Page followed up again to request approval to speak at the NES event and to reiterate that NES would love to have Mr. Trump speak at this annual celebration in Page's place. Footnote 558. Campaign manager Corey Lewandowski responded the same day, saying, "If you want to do this, it would be outside, sick, of your role with the DJT for president campaign. I am certain Mr. Trump will not be able to attend." Footnote 559. In early July 2016, Page traveled to Russia for the NES events. On July 5, 2016, Denis Klimentov, copying his brother Dmitry Klimentov, footnote 560, emailed Maria Zaharova, the director of the Russian Ministry of Foreign Affairs Information and Press Department, about Page's visit and his connection to the Trump campaign. Footnote 561. Denis Klimentov said in the email that he wanted to draw the Russian government's attention to Page's visit in Moscow. Footnote 562. His message to Zaharova continued, "Page is Trump's advisor on foreign policy. He is a known businessman. He used to work in Russia. If you have any questions, I will be happy to help contact him." Footnote 563. Dmitry Klimentov then contacted Russian Press Secretary Dmitry Peskov about Page's visit to see if Peskov wanted to introduce Page to any Russian government officials. Footnote 564. The following day, Peskov responded to what appears to have been the same Denis Klimentov-Zaharova email thread. Peskov wrote, "I have read about Page. Specialists say that he is far from being the main one, so I better not initiate a meeting in the Kremlin." Footnote 565. On July 7, 2016, Page delivered the first of his two speeches in Moscow at NES. Footnote 566. In the speech, Page criticized the U.S. government's foreign policy toward Russia, stating that Washington and other Western capitals have impeded potential progress through their often hypocritical focus on ideas such as democratization, inequality, corruption, and regime change. Footnote 567. On July 8, 2016, Page delivered a speech during the NES commencement. Footnote 568. After Page delivered his commencement address, Russian Deputy Prime Minister and NES board member Arkady Dvorkovich spoke at the ceremony and stated that the sanctions the United States had imposed on Russia had hurt the NES. Footnote 569. Page and Dvorkovich shook hands at the commencement ceremony, and Weber recalled that Dvorkovich made statements to Page about working together in the future. Footnote 570. Redaction, grand jury, including footnote 571. Page said that during his time in Moscow, he met with friends and associates he knew from when he lived in Russia, including Andrei Baranov, a former Gazprom employee who had become the head of investor relations at Rosneft, a Russian energy company. Footnote 572. Page stated that he and Baranov talked about immaterial non-public information. Footnote 573. Page believed he and Baranov discussed Rosneft President Igor Sechin, and he thought Baranov might have mentioned the possibility of a sale of a stake in Rosneft in passing. Footnote 574. Page recalled mentioning his involvement in the Trump campaign with Baranov, although he did not remember details of the conversation. Footnote 575. Page also met with individuals from Tatneft, a Russian energy company, to discuss possible business deals, including having Page work as a consultant. Footnote 576. On July 8, 2016, while he was in Moscow, Page emailed several campaign officials and stated he would send a readout soon regarding some incredible insights and outreach I've received from a few Russian legislators and senior members of the presidential administration here. Footnote 577. On July 9, 2016, Page emailed Clovis, writing in pertinent part, "Russian Deputy Prime Minister and NES board member Arkady Dvorkovich also spoke before the event. In a private conversation, Dvorkovich expressed strong support for Mr. Trump and a desire to work together toward devising better solutions in response to the vast range of current international problems. Based on feedback from a diverse array of other sources close to the presidential administration, it was readily apparent that this sentiment is widely held at all levels of government." Footnote 578. Despite these representations to the campaign, redaction, grand jury, including footnotes 579 through 582. The office was unable to obtain additional evidence or testimony about who Page may have met or communicated with in Moscow. Thus, Page's activities in Russia, as described in his emails with the campaign, were not fully explained. D. Later campaign work and removal from the campaign. In July 2016, after returning from Russia, Page traveled to the Republican National Convention in Cleveland. Footnote 583. While there, Page met Russian Ambassador to the United States, Sergei Kislyak. That interaction is described in Volume 1, Section 4A6A, Infra. Footnote 584. Page later emailed campaign officials with feedback he said he received from ambassadors he had met at the convention, and he wrote that Ambassador Kislyak was very worried about candidate Clinton's world views. Footnote 585. Redaction, grand jury, including footnote 586. Following the convention, Page's trip to Moscow and his advocacy for pro-Russia foreign policy drew the media's attention and began to generate substantial press coverage. The campaign responded by distancing itself from Page, describing him as an informal foreign policy advisor who did not speak for Mr. Trump or the campaign. Footnote 587. On September 23, 2016, Yahoo News reported that U.S. intelligence officials were investigating whether Page had opened private communications with senior Russian officials to discuss U.S. sanctions policy under a possible Trump administration. Footnote 588. A campaign spokesman told Yahoo News that Page had no role in the campaign and that the campaign was not aware of any of his activities, past or present. Footnote 589. On September 24, 2016, Page was formally removed from the campaign. Footnote 590. Although Page had been removed from the campaign after the election, he sought a position in the Trump administration. Footnote 591. On November 14, 2016, he submitted an application to the transition team that inflated his credentials and experiences, stating that in his capacity as a Trump campaign foreign policy advisor, he had met with top world leaders and effectively responded to diplomatic outreach efforts from senior government officials in Asia, Europe, the Middle East, Africa, and the Americas. Footnote 592. Page received no response from the transition team. When Page took a personal trip to Moscow in December 2016, he met again with at least one Russian government official. That interaction and a discussion of the December trip are set forth in Volume 1, Section 4B6, Infra. 4. Dmitry Symes and the Center for the National Interest. Members of the Trump campaign interacted on several occasions with the Center for the National Interest, CNI, principally through its president and chief executive officer, Dmitry Symes. CNI is a think tank with expertise in and connections to the Russian government. Symes was born in the former Soviet Union and immigrated to the United States in the 1970s. In April 2016, candidate Trump delivered his first speech on foreign policy and national security at an event hosted by the National Interest, a publication affiliated with CNI. Then-Senator Jeff Sessions and Russian Ambassador Kislyak both attended the event, and as a result, it gained some attention in relation to Sessions's confirmation hearings to become Attorney General. Sessions had various other contacts with CNI during the campaign period on foreign policy matters, including Russia. Jared Kushner also interacted with Symes about Russian issues during the campaign. The investigation did not identify evidence that the campaign passed or received any messages to or from the Russian government through CNI or Symes. A. CNI and Dmitry Symes connect with the Trump campaign. CNI is a Washington-based nonprofit organization that grew out of a center founded by former President Richard Nixon. Footnote 593. CNI describes itself as a voice for strategic realism in U.S. foreign policy, and publishes a bi-monthly foreign policy magazine, The National Interest. Footnote 594. CNI is overseen by a board of directors and an advisory council that is largely honorary, and whose members at the relevant time included Sessions, who served as an advisor to candidate Trump on national security and foreign policy issues. Footnote 595. Dmitry Symes is president and CEO of CNI, and the publisher and CEO of the National Interest. Footnote 596. Symes was born in the former Soviet Union, emigrated to the United States in the early 1970s, and joined CNI's predecessor after working at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace. Footnote 597. Symes personally has many contacts with current and former Russian government officials. Footnote 598, as does CNI collectively. As CNI stated when seeking a grant from the Carnegie Corporation in 2015, CNI has unparalleled access to Russian officials and politicians among Washington think tanks. Footnote 599, in part because CNI has arranged for U.S. delegations to visit Russia and for Russian delegations to visit the United States as part of so-called Track 2 diplomatic efforts. Footnote 600. On March 14, 2016, CNI board member Richard Plepler organized a luncheon for CNI and its honorary chairman, Henry Kissinger, at the Time Warner Building in New York. Footnote 601. The idea behind the event was to generate interest in CNI's work and recruit new board members for CNI. Footnote 602. Along with Symes, attendees at the event included Jared Kushner, son-in-law of candidate Trump. Footnote 603. Kushner told the office that the event came at a time when the Trump campaign was having trouble securing support from experienced foreign policy professionals, and that as a result, he decided to seek Symes' assistance during the March 14th event. Footnote 604. Symes and Kushner spoke again on a March 24, 2016 phone call. Footnote 605. 3 days after Trump had publicly named the team of foreign policy advisors that had been put together on short notice. Footnote 606. On March 31, 2016, Symes and Kushner had an in-person one-on-one meeting in Kushner's New York office. Footnote 607. During that meeting, Symes told Kushner that the best way to handle foreign policy issues for the Trump campaign would be to organize an advisory group of experts to meet with candidate Trump and develop a foreign policy approach that was consistent with Trump's voice. Footnote 608. Symes believed that Kushner was receptive to that suggestion. Footnote 609. Symes also had contact with other individuals associated with the Trump campaign regarding the campaign's foreign policy positions. For example, on June 17, 2016, Symes sent J.D. Gordon an email with a memo to Senator Sessions that we discussed at our recent meeting, and asked Gordon to both read it and share it with Sessions. The memorandum proposed building a small and carefully selected group of experts to assist Sessions with the campaign, operating under the assumption that Hillary Clinton is very vulnerable on national security and foreign policy issues. The memorandum outlined key issues for the campaign, including a new beginning with Russia. Footnote 610. B. National Interest hosts a foreign policy speech at the Mayflower Hotel. During both their March 24th phone call and their March 31st in-person meeting, Symes and Kushner discussed the possibility of CNI hosting a foreign policy speech by candidate Trump. Footnote 611. Following those conversations, Symes agreed that he and others associated with CNI